The war for Warner Brothers seems to be reaching a possible conclusion.
Weeks ago, it seemed almost certain that Netflix would be acquiring the legacy media company.
But as of this week, Paramount submitted the winning bid, and Netflix bowed out.
So, how did we get here?
And what does this deal mean for the future of the media industry?
I'm Sarah Morrison.
And I'm Jason Acuna, and this is Unbothered by WFSU. Today, I'm joined by my guest co-host, Sarah Morrison, who is also our membership coordinator. Hello, Sarah.
Hi, Jason.
So, how much do you know about this merger, this new merger between Paramount and Warner Brothers?
Honestly, Jason, I didn't know too much about this merger before you brought it to my attention, and I feel like there's a lot more that I should know about this merger, especially as much TV and media that I consume.
100%. I mean, this is definitely going to impact everyone who enjoys watching television and movies. And this all really started late last year when Warner Brothers announced it was splitting into two companies. Warner Brothers, which would be the streaming and theatrical side of the company, and then Discovery, which would take on the linear TV assets like their TV channels. During that time, Paramount put in a bid for Warner Brothers, leading Warner Brothers to kind of look for a better offer than what Paramount was offering, and Netflix came into the equation. This kind of angered Paramount and led them to launch a hostile bid, but back in December, Warner Brothers was still choosing Netflix with Netflix's all-cash offer. That was until very recently, last week, when Paramount returned with another increased bid, this time matching the offering price that Netflix was offering, but they are including both Warner Brothers and Discovery, whereas Netflix was only looking to buy Warner Brothers. The Warner Brothers board decided that the Paramount offer at this point was superior, at which point Netflix decided that they were finished offering and backed out of the deal. And now Paramount is set up to purchase and merge with Warner Brothers Discovery.
I had no idea that all of this was happening. It does give me pause that Paramount is inching closer to what looks like a monopoly. Would I be right in kind of taking that approach to this situation?
Well, that is the question many are asking, including, I'm assuming, the regulators themselves as this deal moves forward. But those were some really interesting questions that I wanted to look into. And so I spoke to an expert on business mergers, as well as an assistant professor of journalism, to find out more about what might happen if this merger goes through.
Hello, my name's David King. I'm an Higdon Professor of Management at Florida State University, and my specialty is in mergers and acquisitions. And it's great to be back to discuss the Warner Brothers deal.
Yeah, Professor, welcome back. It's great to have you on again. It seems a lot has happened since the last time we spoke, but my first question is kind of, could you give us a slight recap of what we kind of talked about last time? Where did we leave off with Warner Brothers' sale?
Yeah, this has been, you know, a lot of drama. I mean, it's probably better than some of the shows that are on the streaming services. It all kind of started with a public bid from Paramount that was hostile in September 25. And it looks like the Warner Brothers management looked for what's called a white knight, someone else to acquire them because they weren't keen on Paramount. And Netflix made a bid in December of 2025. The initial bid from Paramount was $19, and Netflix came in with $27.75, and that was going to be initially a mix of cash and Netflix stock. They later changed it to all cash, but Paramount kept kind of sniping from the sidelines, even though that they'd reached an agreement between Warner Brothers and Netflix. And it was really unusual. About a week ago, Netflix offered that they would give 5 days for Paramount to look at the deal and to make a better offer if they wanted to. And Netflix came back and offered $31 per share. The difference between the deals is Netflix was only going to buy part of the company, and they were going to spin off CNN and all the television stations. The CNN and television stations are valued about $4 billion. So Netflix's offer was really $31.75. But it wasn't the whole package, and they'd have to figure out what to do with the rest of it. Paramount is going to buy the whole thing now for $31, But Warner Brothers has said that that's the better deal, which is kind of interesting.
So Netflix originally seemed to be the definite winner of this bidding war for Warner Brothers with $31 for just the Warner Brothers side, not the Discovery side of the business. And now Paramount has come in with a superior bid in the eyes of the Warner Brothers board. That is $31 for both, which I think equals around $110 billion total.
Correct. And they're going to pay Netflix a $2.8 billion breakup fee as part of that.
Can you talk to me a little bit more about this winning bid from Paramount? Is that all it is, straightforward, or did they offer anything else other than just kind of matching the price that Netflix was offering per share?
They basically matched the price from Netflix and they were going to buy the entire company. But that's somewhat misleading because they've already identified they're going to have $6 billion in cost synergies, which means they're going to get rid of a lot of employees and assets to try to help cover their debt. I mean, so they've already planned, they're going to buy the whole thing, but they already have plans to get rid of parts of it. Yeah, Netflix doesn't really have any production facilities. They purchase the content or otherwise negotiate it and kind of just run it out. And Warner Brothers and both Paramount have, huge complexes in Los Angeles and other places around the world. And then they're much more similar companies. So, like, they already bought Skydance recently. So, they already had about $80 billion in debt. Now they're going to go up to, the estimates vary between $90 to $100 billion in debt. And that's going to be a huge amount of debt that has service. I mean, the impact that one of the things we talked about last time was the impact on consumers. I mean, so what does this mean for your streaming services? I think Netflix realistically could have probably made the combination of HBO and Netflix cheaper, but I'm not sure that's going to happen with Paramount because they're going to have to be able to pay down all this debt. HBO Max costs about $10 to $21, depending on whether you allow advertising, and Paramount is $8 to $13 per month, depending on whether you allow advertising. And I don't think that they can shave the price of that much. I mean,
Right.
so it's really interesting.
That does kind of get me into my next question, which was, does it make sense financially for Paramount? Because, they already did kind of have a lot of this debt that they had from the Skydance merger, and now they're taking on a lot more debt to purchase Warner Brothers. So does it
It's an interesting strategy. So Warner Brothers and Discovery combined to try to get bigger to be able to compete, and they weren't able to compete. Paramount's already bought Skydance to be able to bulk up and to be able to compete. That it's searching for this deal with Warner Brothers suggests that it hasn't really gotten that scale yet. I mean, so buying Warner Brothers Discovery is really doubling down on a strategy that's already failed twice.
Right.
So I don't think it makes a lot of sense. And I think one of the reasons Netflix kind of backed away from the deal and offered this 5 day, the week long window to have Paramount come back is that once they announced the deal, their stock price had fallen about 20 to 30%. And now that they've backed away from the deal, their stock price is up 20%. I mean, to get back to where it was, it'd have to double to be 40% up. But people seem to think that Netflix backed away from what could have been a bad deal, and Paramount now is kind of doubling down on what's been a failed strategy previously.
Absolutely. And that's not to mention that in the media production industry that Paramount and Warner Brothers and Netflix are all in, it takes a lot of capital to create things for the consumers. So even though they've now kind of purchased all of these assets from Warner Brothers, they will need to invest a lot of capital to, make the new Harry Potter series and other things like that that Warner Brothers was already planning on making, or things that Paramount may plan to make with Warner Brothers content.
Yeah, and
So
they've gave, basically 2.8 billion to their competitor to be able to create content. They're already made plans to reduce the staff and facilities by 6 billion. I mean, so they're going to be cash constrained to be able to create the content that they want. And then they're going to have to basically say they won't raise prices for their streaming services, but that doesn't mean they're going to lower them. So they probably won't be able to lower them. I mean, so their ability to attract consumers. And then the other problem is that the competitors aren't just going to be static. Before this deal was announced, Taylor Sheridan, who created Yellowstone and Landman for Paramount, has already announced he left to go to NBC Universal. Is that the overlap between Warner Brothers and Skydance and Paramount? the CNN and CBS News, which is already owned by Paramount. I mean, there's going to be people that are going to be looking to leave, and Netflix could take the $2.8 billion just to kind of go in and headhunt the people that they wanted from the deal, because they were able to probably identify the employees that they wanted as part of this deal, and now they can make offers to hire them away.
100%. And are there any additional regulatory concerns now that Paramount is looking like the buyer?
I think there is. It's probably less at the federal level of the U.S. government, but there's 190 nations that have regulatory review. I mean, so wherever Paramount Plus and HBO operate worldwide, they'll have to clear those hurdles. It'll probably not be a problem, but each U.S. state attorney general also has to review and approve a deal. In this case, the California is probably the biggest impact, because there'll be significant job losses in Los Angeles based on the deal and the plans for $6 billion, and then also just the concentration that's going to happen is that we're kind of going from five movie producers down to like three, and then CNN and CBS News are, large area where people get news. And then there's been some concern about how CBS has been editorially controlled by the Ellison family following their purchase of CBS.
Absolutely. And that's not including Oracle's ownership of TikTok, while it isn't a news agency like CBS or CNN, is also part of the media landscape.
Right.
Absolutely. And so we know that Disney already merged with 21st Century Fox, and now Paramount is looking to merge with Warner Brothers. Are there any other major media mergers looming in the future, or is this maybe the last one we'll be seeing for a while?
Right now, I think Peacock and NBC are too small to kind of survive on their own, and Apple Plus or TV is probably too small to kind of survive on its own. The problem with Apple is that they make a lot of money, so they're not necessarily worried about this problem, so that they don't have to sell. But I think that NBC and Peacock have to kind of come up with something. Either they're going to form an alliance, or they might fold into something that's bigger than them. Who that would be? Because the regulatory problems is a big question mark. Google has like the YouTube TV and TV, the subscription kind of cable thing. If they want to get into more of the content game, that would be an option for them to potentially buy it. Apple could buy it to be able to try to beef up, its content. And then if Netflix decided to go into TV, which they say that they haven't. I don't think it would be them, but Amazon Prime would be an option. They are starting to do sports and some other things that they could be able to pick up from NBC and Peacock. I mean, so I think something will happen with NBC and Peacock, and it would probably be Apple, Google, or Amazon that would do that. But a lot of the what's happened already, I couldn't have predicted. So that's, take that for what it's worth.
100%. So we'll keep our eyes on Peacock, but for now, it doesn't look like much will be happening. Is there anything else regarding this merger between Warner Brothers and Paramount that you find interesting or that you think we should be paying attention to, either now or in the future?
There's going to be a lot of people that leave Warner Brothers from this. I mean, so the story's not really over, even though Paramount's most likely to purchase it at this point. I mean, so I just, continue to watch this. And then if you do subscribe to Paramount and HBO Max, is that don't expect this to, save you money every month.
Professor King, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me about Warner Brothers again and about this huge merger.
Thanks, it's my pleasure.
And with Paramount emerging as the buyer, many are voicing concerns over the future of journalism due to one company owning so much media. I'm joined now by an expert to discuss further.
I'm Stan Jastrzebski. I'm an assistant professional practice professor at the University of Missouri School of Journalism.
Absolutely, Stan. Well, thank you so much for being here with us and discussing the effects of this merger on news. So I will just jump right into my first question. What does this merger kind of mean for the future of mainstream news media and journalism in general?
I think it remains to be seen. It's worth noting that you've seen consolidation of news sources in the past, sometimes for better or for worse. So this is certainly not unprecedented. I think it's going to have a lot of implications for scholarship in terms of how we look at media, particularly in terms of how you look at things like the Federal Communications Commission overseeing ownership of media. There's talk right now about whether the ownership rules should be changed such that the current caps are changed on ownership groups running a certain number of newsrooms or in a certain number of markets. And so this may have ripple effects on that ongoing discussion. And I think also we need to be a little careful to speculate what's going to happen. I think that, you know, sometimes there are possibilities for people to get caught up in what might happen. I think we want to really be sure that we wait to see where the proof comes down. Now, there have already been things like Barry Weiss allegedly pulling a story off of 60 Minutes shortly after she became the editorial director there, after running her slightly right-of-center news site, The Free Press. But the story, I think, eventually did air, just not when it was originally supposed to. And apparently it aired without a whole lot of editing from when it was originally supposed to air. And so you're going to take a look at things like timing. You're going to take a look at things like content. And if we start to hear the journalists in these organizations, to whom we should listen very carefully, I think, in the coming days, start to say that they feel there has been censorship of some sort, then we can start to suss out what is actually happening and where these editorial decisions are being made.
And moving on to an adjacent point, so with the Ellison family in charge of Paramount currently and also Oracle, which owns TikTok in the U.S. and has a lot of government contracts, is that a potential cause for concern in terms of conflict of interest?
I mean, you certainly have had times where if you look at, for instance, the late 19th century in the United States, you certainly had a fair amount of wealth and power consolidated into a few people's hands or a few families' hands. And so this is, again, not unprecedented, but you also have had laws that have come out of such consolidation. And so we really are in a time that is precedented more than it is unprecedented. And it will be interesting to see how much people look at the history books to inform how they are judging the actions of today's media conglomerates and how they are judging whether it is to be dealt with in the way that we have dealt with these things in the past.
So obviously this is going to have a lot of effects on potentially mainstream media, but that isn't the only form of media that's out there. We also have independent journalists and public media. So what could this all mean for independent journalists and public media?
It's an interesting question because one thing that you cannot say about public media, which is what I study in an academic context, is you can't say that it's consolidated. Individual public media stations buy programming from NPR or from PBS or from other public media stations, but the ownership of them is incredibly distributed to many, many different universities or owned by the small groups of local people who are essentially the board of directors for a lot of the big city stations in the United States. And those are basically your two sorts of media ownership models if you're a public media station, is the community model or the educational model. And they are not beholden to what they are told by NPR or PBS. Those larger systems will come down with advice on what they think best practices might be. But if you do not want to run the particular program at a particular time, no one is going to stop you from doing that. That stands in contrast to some of the commercial media organizations, which have these must-run dictates that say you are going to put this language on at such and so a time or in your newscast on this evening. NPR and PBS don't do that. And so the American people have, in some respects, been given an opportunity here to judge a couple of very different ways of going about ownership structures. And in the end, if you believe in a free market economy of news, you can choose between public and commercial media. You can choose between any of those and things you get on social media. And we know that people do get information from all of these platforms. And it's going to be interesting to see which of them wins out in the long term. And hopefully people have a sober discussion about how the money is raised and earned in each cases. And how people are influenced by that money. You will have an opportunity as an American media consumer going forward to judge whether you like this larger, more consolidated commercial landscape, or if you like individual people like those you find on TikTok and Instagram, or if you want to go the public media route.
Stan, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me and letting us borrow your expertise.
Happy to do it. Thanks for having me.
Unbothered is produced, edited, and hosted by Jason Acuna. Audio engineering by Taylor Cox. Executive producers Regan McCarthy and Lynn Hatter, and brought to you by WFSU Public Media.